Hello, and welcome to the next episode of TAP. My name is Gretel. I will be your host today. And with me, I'm joined by Vishal and Devin, who are some of Broadway's rising stars. Today, we're going to talk theater, we're going to talk race, politics, and of course, the Tonys. On June 11th, the Tonys were hosted back at Radio City Music Hall after a brief period at the Beacon Theater by Kevin Spacey. These two lovely fellows made some amazing appearances on the show. So I want to kind of dig into the deep of, A, what was it like to be on the Tonys as part of a performing act? And tell me a little bit about yourselves, what show you're in, and some of you are having their Broadway debut.
Some of you. That some of them is me. I'm Vishal Vaidya, and I am currently in Groundhog Day, the musical. I play Larry the cameraman. And the Tonys were pretty incredible. It was my first time performing, obviously, at the Tonys. So being on that huge stage was kind of overwhelming and really exciting. And I got to see Kevin Spacey backstage a couple of times and all sorts of celebrities. Actually, Devin and I passed each other. Our casts passed each other in the hallway because they were performing right before us. It was pretty wild, I would say.
Yeah, it was. I'm Devin. I play Tui in Miss Saigon. And wild is the right word for it. I mean, it's funny, but I think back to when I was a kid watching the Tonys. And you never really think about performing on them, about even going to them. And so when it's actually happening, you're kind of like, or I was kind of like, oh, it happened. And it was so fast and it was so furious. And suddenly, you know, people were screaming and the audience was going crazy. And then we're back on a bus going back to our theater to take our costumes off. And it's just sort of like, wow, I did that. And then you watch it on YouTube the next day and you're like, wow, I did that. But it doesn't even feel like it did anything. It was just like a huge whirlwind. And yes, completely overwhelming, but not to the point where I couldn't control myself or what I was doing, because obviously I did. But it was just really, really, really like, just like, I was overcome with all these different emotions.
So what is that bus experience like?
Yeah, so I don't know if people know, but a lot of times performers who are on the Tonys don't actually attend the ceremony because, you know, you would have to buy tickets and they want to sell them to other people who can be there full time and the nominees and celebrities and everyone else. So the casts get ready at their theaters and then they get on a bus. You're bused to Radio City at a very specific time. You get off the bus, you wait backstage, you go on stage and perform very quickly. Come back off stage and leave, and that is it. It's very quick, and it's pretty crazy because it's nice because you're in your own space getting ready, so it seems that part of it makes it a little more ritualized and more calm than it might otherwise be. But once you're in Radio City, it's very fast and exciting, and yeah, I would say surreal.
So did you know, like, going in that Kevin Spacey did a Groundhog Day joke or number? Were you watching it at your theater before you went in, or what was that like?
I didn't know. I had heard that he was going to make a Groundhog Day joke, and his opening number was pretty phenomenal. My favorite part was when they took the cast from Dear Evan Hansen from his arm and strapped it to his leg in the parody of Andy Carl's ACL, which is now much better. The opening number was so great. And he had come to see most of the shows in the weeks leading up to the Tonys. So it was kind of nice because we had already met him and he was very sweet backstage, given that he was doing all of that work to host the Tonys and he's doing a show right now, right? Or he just finished a show, his own show.
Yeah, recently.
Yeah. So speaking of backstage, Devin, I saw you briefly behind Rachel Bloom, who was doing some interviews backstage. What was that like? I mean, I felt her energy coming off this TV screen.
I'm not going to lie. I don't know who she is because I don't watch that show. I don't really watch television. So I just knew that there was someone holding like a, you know, a reporter or something, like being like, oh, and next up we have. So I really, I don't know who she is. It was just one of those where I was there. I knew a camera was on us and we were just like waving and like screaming. And it's like crazy and wild in that, you know, the cast that just finished performing Come From Away came before us. So we're screaming for them mm-hmm. too, as they're coming off, because we can watch their performance, which is electric to us off stage. And then knowing that we're about to do it. So it was just like, wow. And then here we are like on camera, and I know my mom's watching. So of course, you know, like,
so speaking of about to do it, you had a very particularly dramatic entrance or exit, I would say, maybe, on the Tonys.
Yes.
and for those who don't know, within a minute of the Miss Saigon scene starting, Devin, you get shot.
Yes. And it's funny because it evolved to be that. I remember when we first started putting together our Tonys performance, all I knew was that I would be starting in her arms and she would scream no. And I was like, oh, I'm literally a dead body the whole time. I don't have to do anything. And then they just kept saying, let's add more. Let's add more of the scene. Let's add more. Let's musicalize it. And then, of course, you always have to wait for the network. But, you know, our team would say, hey, can we show a gun? Hey, can we show action? Can we show him perhaps stabbing a child? Sorry, spoiler. Like trying to. And so they just kept adding to it. And I didn't know that all of a sudden I would be doing what I ended up doing on the Tonys. How did I prepare for it? It was, again, we keep using this word, but it was completely electric. Coming on stage, I kept looking at Eva and knowing that she has to sing this huge, incredible song. And we just like looked at each other, and in real life, we're like brother, sister. We like zeroed in and like completely focused. And then from then on, it was just tunnel vision. I heard the downbeat of when I actually come to life and when the lights come in on us. And it was just, and before I knew it was done and I was off stage. So I don't even remember any of the performance at all whatsoever. It was just there.
Oh my goodness. So you had to, again, watch it back
yes.
on YouTube to yes. remember it.
Yeah.
And Vish, for you, this on your Broadway debut, getting to be on the show in a very snazzy jacket,
yes.
I might say. What was that like?
It was cool. I was glad it was that outfit for me, because it is definitely the snazziest of the ones I have. and it was, you know, Radio City is probably 3 times the size of our normal stage that we perform on nightly. So trying to fill that space and knowing that you would also have to be on camera and be nuanced enough for camera is an interesting challenge, because Radio City is massive. But you could feel that energy, you know, there's a giant LED screen that was the curtain, I guess. And so you set up behind it. So it doesn't seem like, it seems like any normal performance. And then the screen lifts up and there are just tens of thousands of people in there. And it was pretty crazy. And I'm, you know, it's my Broadway debut, but I can be cynical and jaded like the best of them. But it did get me. And we did Seeing You, which is the last number in the show. And
another spoiler alert.
Yes. Whoops. And I get to dance with Becca Falkenberry, who plays Nancy in the show, and asking her to dance for some reason that night made me very emotional, because it was crazy. It was cool.
Ah.
Can I just interject real quick and say that I remember telling someone this that night when we got to our Tony party. That's my one regret from the Tony's performance. I never once looked up.
Me either.
I was so I didn't see the people. I didn't see like how big and grand it was. I was focused on Eva the whole time, because I'm like, oh my God, I don't want to screw this up. You know, I'm trying to pay attention to my craft and what I'm doing, that I never like took myself out of it. I was there with her for like that moment. It's cool because it ended up being, I think, a really good performance. But I look back and I'm like, ooh, if I was maybe just like that much more seasoned, I would have like fire. While I was dead, I would have turned my head a little more and just looked out. I mean, I am laying there for another minute. I should have just, like, opened my eyes, but I didn't. I didn't. So that's my one regret. But at the same time, I pat myself on the back for, like, taking my craft first.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it is cool, right?
Yeah. Speaking of the after parties, any cool after party stories?
Ours was pretty chill. We were at a bar. It was very celebratory, and we hadn't seen a lot of our creative team in a long time because they're all in the UK and Australia, everywhere. So that was really nice seeing all of them and being together as a company for the first time in a really long time. The stage manager from the Old Vic production, Natalie Wood, was over helping us get the show on its feet, and she is incredible. And that was probably my favorite thing, is that she came back and surprised us. I didn't know she was going to be in town and attending the Tonys. So she kind of crushes it all the time. So seeing her walk in with her dress looking really fly,
yes,
just made me so happy. And yeah, it's just a nice time for everyone to get together and celebrate. We actually had the opportunity to attend and buy tickets for a discounted price. And I was going to originally, but then, rightfully so, I decided not to, so that I could just be with the company, because that's really what it's about. It's celebrating the shows and putting them up and the Broadway community. And it would have been nice to be in Radio City and watching everything, but I'm glad I was able to watch it on a screen and drinking with my cast.
Same. You know, we were at the Dream Hotel, the Fishbowl, downstairs, the downstairs bar. And it was awesome because we got to see you. Like, we get to watch the other performances on TV, on, like, the multiple screens that they had set up. And then I guess because we were at the Dream, we had skee ball and mini and bowling.
Yes.
So, I mean, like, and I wasn't drinking and couldn't have carbs because I was on a crazy diet for a medical condition. But that being said, I was just like, well, if I'm going to be at this place, I'm going to be bowling. And I'm going to be... And it was great, because then a performance would come on and everyone would scream, yo, Great Comet's on, or Groundhog Day's on. And we would all, like, run to the TVs. And it was a lot of fun. And yes, like, you talk about the camaraderie of the cast and being with your company. And, you know, we went nuts when they got to the nominations for Best Actress, and they zoom in on Eve, and we're like, she's so beautiful! Oh my God! And we're screaming at her, and she looked great, and we're, all of us are just, like, throwing things at the screen. It was awesome.
Just skee balls breaking.
Yes!
Breaking.
Oh no! And speaking of, like, that camaraderie on Broadway or in the theater community, I think that is what the Tonys are about, is celebrating that and honoring that and feeling that to a national/international audience. And, you know, right now, I think people are watching theater excitedly and really paying attention to, like, what's going on. Hashtag thank you, Hamilton. And thinking about what, you know, how do we do this differently? What is new? What is fresh? I know Vishal of Groundhog Day has gotten a lot of interest in casting a wide variety of cast members in roles that don't necessarily have a race to them, which has been fantastic, and also featuring a lot of Asians, including yourself. Do you really feel like that they are taking a step forward in being able to do that? But also, how do you see that continuing?
Yeah, so the show is about community, and the community of people in Punxsutawney is sort of the foil and the lens through which Phil Connors sees goodness. So they have to be, you have to learn about each member of the community. And to make that easier, it's actually easier to do so if everyone looks completely different. Mm-hmm. And so it's not actually even racial diversity only. We have diversity of ages and body shapes and heights and all sorts of distinctive features to each person in the company. And it's what's wonderful about that is that none of that was in the breakdowns. They really just wanted unique looking people who were good actors and movers. And in doing so, they've done a service to the storytelling, which is that you really get to know everyone in the world of the play, because Phil, by the end of the show, he knows everyone so well. That being said, the racial diversity is great because, I mean, I'm an Indian American and there are very few of us. I think I can count on a handful the number of Indian Americans in Broadway musicals right now. And a friend of mine said her friend came to the show and said, wow, they've even got an Indian up there. Because usually if, you know, when people think about diversity, it's really tokenism. So there will be a mostly white cast with
maybe a token black guy.
Yeah, a token black guy and an Asian girl or some sort of mix of one black person and one Asian person. And this is nice because A, race had nothing to do with any role specifically, but we've got Ray Lee, who's amazing, and myself representing the Asians. And we have Camden Gonzalez, we have Barrett Doss, Rayon. We have a lot of different folks of different racial upbringings, backgrounds, not upbringings.
Everybody were brought up in the race that they are.
Yeah, that's true.
But for you, Devin, you are were also in Les Mis before this, and are now in a show that has gotten a lot of attention for its casting in the past, and now has a fully represented Asian cast now on Broadway. And I know you guys take a lot of pride in that. Like, were there ever any discussions? Obviously, there's a lot of different types of Asians also in the cast. Which is also exciting because, again, it's bringing together a diverse community, even though it may not look like it from the outside.
You know what's so funny? This is pretty personal. You know, okay, I can tell this story. Coming out the stage door, I mean, our fans are so wonderful. People who are fans of theater shows are just like, they really believe in your work. And that's just really, really inspiring as an actor. And sometimes they claim ownership on the work and stuff. And so many times have I come out and, you know, our Filipino fans are so... I'm Filipino-American, like 100% Filipino. Both my parents are from the Philippines. And some of our fans have said to me, coming out, oh, is everybody in the show Filipino? Do they all speak Tagalog backstage? And I was like, no. And they get offended because, you know, in the past, because there's such, you know, our community as Filipinos, we'd love to sing and we love to perform. And there was Lea Salonga. Mm-hmm. And ever since that, there has been, usually Miss Saigon is chock full of Filipinos. And beautifully in this company, I say, we're not. We actually have Vietnamese cast members who speak Vietnamese. We have Japanese people and Koreans. And of course, there are Filipinos. And we have people who are adopted and don't really, and you know, identify with more than one background, racial background, because of their upbringing. And so that actually makes it super diverse backstage. It has also helped the show so much because it makes you realize a lot of people, you know, look at it and you're like, oh, it's in Saigon, it's in Vietnam. Well, guess what? A whole chunk of it also takes place in Bangkok. That's Thailand. So that, again, is like, well, we have a Thai person in the cast who speaks Thai. When we're ad-libbing, you should ad-lib in Thai. And that usually, that may not have happened in the past. Mm-hmm. In the past, you know, I think about it, in past productions of Saigon that I have done, we would be like talking in Tagalog on stage because it was mostly Filipinos. And now we speak Vietnamese on stage. We speak Thai on stage, you know, and that's really kind of awesome. She sees a different kind of diversity in our show that you maybe wouldn't get in other instances. But you wouldn't know. I mean, you wouldn't know it unless we told you.
Exactly. Or if you're Asian and you can look at last names and you're like, but at the same time, I think that's great. And you feel, again, a community coming together to produce a story and a powerful story at that. And P.S., if you haven't seen Miss Saigon or Groundhog Day, I do recommend that you go see it ASAP so you don't miss either of these two. So I think that's fantastic for what's happening right now. But I want to talk a little bit about, you know, what's coming or what you want to see coming. Because I think a lot of what we talked about on Tapped is, you know, putting ideas out into the ether. And I think for both of you who are extremely talented, and have worked incredibly hard to get on Broadway. What are the things, because I feel like there is so much left to explore, especially for characters, whether they're Asian or not, but of a variety of different perspectives left out there to be told through song and dance and words and poems and in ways that we haven't yet seen. What are the things or ideas or roles that you guys kind of see coming down the pipeline, not only for yourself that you wish you could pursue or that you just want to see out there?
Oh gosh, that's always so hard.
I have an idea. What's your idea? And I haven't seen it, but I've read about it. But like Doll's House Part 2, like yes. Whenever would you all of a sudden picture, you know, Kanola Rashad is there?
Yeah.
But then all of a sudden, and again, I haven't seen it, but everyone talks about it. You look and you go, yeah. You watch it and you go, yeah, she just is. I want that to happen. Where you look and maybe in the very beginning you kind of go, oh. But then, yeah. Yeah, I get it now. Okay, so you did a little, something's different. Someone is different. Some ones are different. And that's okay. I hope that happens where it challenges our audiences to be better, if that makes sense. Like, you're not just looking at something as black and white. You're coming in and actually seeing multicolor and really going along with the story that's being told, as opposed to being like, well, show us. Like, letting mm-hmm. everything be black and white. Let it be, like, color everywhere, if that makes sense. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And as it is, musicals are not hyper-realistic, right?
Right.
You're going
suspending
in.
Suspending reality,
yeah. You're suspending reality and willing to put that aside to go on the journey. You know, that's in front of you. So I think with that, I don't know nowadays that there's a need to be so, yeah, black and white. What I would like is probably a more, yeah, diverse palette of storytelling,
yes.
I suppose, from which to draw from. I mean, I'm in a movie musical, and it's a great adaptation, and I'm all for those. But, there are a few original shows out right now, and I think that's incredible, and I'd love to see more of that. But I think, we have yet to have a show about Indian Americans on Broadway, and there are a few in the works, and we have had one, actually. Never mind. We had Bombay Dreams. Mm-hmm. I totally forgot about that. I was, like, 14 when it came out. That was Andrew Lloyd Webber, and I want to see some Indian, like, fully Indian creative teams. Mm-hmm. And I think that is ultimately where the power lies, is in the creative teams and producers and diversifying not just the company of actors, but people on all sides of the storytelling, because that's where you'll get true diversity of perspectives.
I think that brings about a really interesting point. I see, like, two complete different sides right now. Like, from the Asian perspective, you know, doing Miss Saigon, which is written by a predominantly French-British team, I want an Asian story that's written by Asians. We haven't had a lot of that, you know? And not everything can be or should be written by David Henry Wong.
Right.
You know, or workshopped by him.
Yeah.
So let's get all those writers, let's get them telling their stories. On that same level, I also see on the other side, so that's like Asian story being told and written and created by Asian people. Then I stop and I go, you know, but I am an Asian American. Now let's highlight under American. The American part of it. So let's look at something like Next to Normal and make that just all Asians.
Mm-hmm.
Let's make Fun Home. Yeah, that totally could have happened with Asians. That totally could have happened with Black people.
And
that could have been a Latino family.
As long as in that. In
right.
In
Chinatown.
Did they
do
it Next to Normal?
Yes.
Yeah.
In the Philippines.
Yeah.
Let's see it here.
Yeah. Yeah.
But so that's an interesting juxtaposition, though, because then you're asking a lot of the community, and I know there has been a lot of discussion among, you know, specifically Asian actors, like, well, what are you fighting for? Are you fighting to do, like, an American musical? You're fighting to tell Asian stories. And unfortunately, you go, well, both.
Oh,
mm-hmm.
All. Yeah.
But you know what I mean, where people have said, well, you need to focus. I say,
no.
Like, oh, broaden the focus. Let's
no.
do it all.
Yeah.
But that's, to me, that's where I see, like, something that could be so interesting. Yes, tell an Asian American, American story. And then, of course, tell an Asian story.
Yeah.
Because you are both
right,
you know, as yourself right now. And, you know, that's all part of your story, as both being from an immigrant family as well as being an American and being somebody who grew up in the 90s and experiencing those things.
Oh, God, yes.
Those are all part of, you know, an American tale as well as a family tale.
Right.
Yeah. Riz Ahmed has a really great article, I think, in The Guardian, where he talks about the three different types of casting, basically, as a person of color. And the first is, you know, playing the cab driver. The second level is playing, you know, an Indian guy, but someone who has a regular arc and fully realized character. And then the third he calls the Holy Grail, which is kind of what I'm lucky to do in Groundhog Day, which is just to play someone without any sort of connection to race. And obviously you do want to do both, because my race and identity as an Indian American and Hindu is deeply important to who I am.
Yes.
And is a part of the American quilt, if you will. So like, we want to highlight that and tell that, but that's not all we are. So you want to be able to do, you know, you just want to play someone or tell the story of someone and play that person without making it about race. And
yes,
luckily in Groundhog
Day, we don't
have
to be an archetype.
Yeah. And I don't have to do that right now, which is awesome.
Mm-hmm.
Just a dude.
So last thing, thank you for joining me for this podcast. What are the things you want people to walk away from this conversation, and how can we continue to follow your journeys?
Oh gosh. Okay. What do I want people to walk away with? I think the theater is such a beautiful medium of storytelling, and it allows for a greater suspension of disbelief in many ways, because it is kind of magic. And I think that we need to take advantage of that and use that to tell different stories and new stories. And I think that audience members, creators, everyone needs to be a part of that. If you are someone who loves theater, go see something that might be out of your wheelhouse. You know, if you think you don't like puppetry, go see a puppet show, or go see a ballet, an opera, anything that might be outside of what you normally know, because you might be surprised by what you find you love. You can follow me on Twitter at Tweets by Vish. That's Tweets by V-I-S-H. I'm also on Instagram at Vishgram, V-I-S-H-G-R-A-M.
And you should absolutely follow him before October, because what happens in October on your pages?
October is hashtag Riftober.
Woo!
And in October, every day, mostly every day, I do little riff videos, and you can follow along, and I do some challenges if you like singing that you can take part in.
Yay. My turn.
Yes.
I hope people take away a feeling, either being like frustrated or has a fire sparked underneath, that you want to have a conversation about race, about color conscious casting, about color blind casting, about inappropriate color casting. I want people to start, like, not even start, but keep talking about it, because then it's out in the open and everyone's just like fueling conversation, because that's when we all learn from one another, as opposed to just sort of like ignoring. That's interesting to me. And I hope that we, once talking about it, we look past it and then look at like the humanity underneath it. And looking about like how every single person is like an individual human, and finding the humanness in stories, because within that, then we find the universality of it. Mm-hmm. And we can see that almost anybody can tell any story, but it's the how that gets interesting. Mm-hmm. And it's the how that gets theatrical and magical, like you said. So that's what I hope you walk away from this with. My social media is Instagram. Social media of choice. So you can follow me at Hello There, I'm Dev. It's Hello There, I am D-E-V.
That's it.
Yay! And I hope you continue
come to see our shows.
Come follow them on Groundhog Day, the musical, Miss Saigon on Broadway. And continue to follow this podcast at Tuft Pod on Facebook and Twitter. And again, thank you for listening and see you next episode.
Peace. Bye.